Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen. I'm the president and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit organizations, primarily in the areas of board excellence, strategy, and organizational development. I want to welcome everybody back to another episode of the podcast. I am thrilled and excited for this conversation. I've been planning this conversation for several weeks now and looking forward to it. And without further ado, I want to introduce our guest today, Anika Allen. Anika is with the Empathy Agency. Anika, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Greg. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Right before we started recording, you shared a quote with me that really sums up the topic of our conversation. So I didn't preview the topic at the outset of the podcast. I'd love for you to share that quote with our audience and talk a little bit about what brings you to the podcast today.
Sure. So I love Audre Lorde, and she said, "Without community, there is no liberation." And so it is from that perspective that I was hoping we could talk today. And so that quote has meant so much to me over the course of my life, particularly when I look back in retrospect to, you know, various points in my career where, you know, I may not have felt as though, you know, my career was progressing in the way that I wanted to, but how I look beyond the scope and boundaries of my career into community to fulfill some of those needs not being met in my employment. And so at a number of junctures along the way, I found myself in groups of predominantly Black women who were doing really wonderful things in the community, particularly as it relates to addressing, you know, some of the disparities that Black people face in society. And so immersing myself in those communities and in those environments has really bolstered me as a woman, as a mother, and as a professional.
So Anika, we all are part of different communities. There are communities of nonprofit leaders. Our family is a community. Our neighborhood is a community. How do you define community? So when you reflect on that quote, how do you personalize that? Or what speaks to you about it?
Mm-hmm. So the first image that comes to my mind when I think of community, I must say Black women emerge immediately. Not to say that, you know, Black men aren't involved in that and other men and women as well, but I would say Black women really emerge, and there's a historic reason for that. You know, there's quite a bit of evidence around the organizing of Black women over centuries here in North America and in Canada. And so it's not happenstance that that's the image that comes to my mind, because it is often Black women who are, you know, on the front lines of caring for children and making sure that they are, you know, cared for and also receiving the education that they need. Reason why I want to talk about education is because the Hour a Day Study Club, which is one of the oldest women-led charities in Canada, started in 1934 by Black women, mothers, all mothers. And all of these women were descendants of slaves. And so what they chose to do in 1934 was commit both for themselves and for their children an hour a day of studying, focusing on a variety of things pertaining to their community and to society. And it's really with a focus of upliftment. Right. And if you cast that onto the backdrop of history, you know, that also would have been a period of time where in Windsor, where this club originated and still resides, you know, we would be looking at a segregated school system, right, where Black students weren't receiving the support that they needed. And so they, you know, their group was born out of a need to solve a problem.
And that's something that I think resonates with all nonprofit leaders that are listening, is that identification of a problem often that's rooted in history. Many of our listeners probably know who you are. Your work is internationally known. For those who don't know about your background and how it has evolved to include your work in the collective, the Hour a Day Study Club, tell us a little bit about your own personal history, professional history.
Yes. Well, I began fundraising in 1999 in a little community museum in Amherstburg, Ontario, which is about 20 minutes outside of Windsor. And little did I know at the time that I was doing fundraising, because nobody I knew had that title. And so I just knew that I was involved in a really powerful community mobilization effort to save what is now a National Historic Site, the Nazarene AME Church, which is on the property of the Amherstburg Freedom Museum. And so this church was really important, built in 1848. It's a station on the Underground Railroad. It was in disrepair and needed to be repaired. And so this was a campaign to save Nazarene. And so I was hired to write a stewardship report for the federal government. So all levels of government had committed, you know, some $1 million campaign. And so I spent, you know, 6 months poring over primary documents and then engaged in the work of developing and crafting what was quite a lengthy stewardship report. Again, nobody called it a stewardship report. It was just, I think we called it a heritage report, as a matter of fact. And so it's at that point that my career in fundraising began. I went on to work for another community museum in Amherstburg. It's quite a historic town. And left the arts and culture space for healthcare and spent the next 15 years in healthcare, working for Canadian Mental Health and then working for a regional hospital here in London. It's only at the point where I entered healthcare that a CEO said, "Have you ever thought about being a fundraiser?" And it's the first time I actually heard the title fundraiser. And when she put the job posting or the job description in front of me, you know, it was ironic that all of the qualifications, skills required, I could do all those things, right? And so it was from that perspective that I said yes, and I joined that team. And then I went on to pursue the profession with more focus by going to school and, you know, accreditation and those sorts of things.
Excellent. And then eventually your work, you're a storyteller. We can all tell that you're a storyteller, but your work led you to link up history and historical experiences with the ability to tell stories. Talk to us about how that came about.
Yeah, so you're right. So I consider myself to be a griot, which is a storyteller in an African tradition. And that is something that comes really naturally to me, and likely because there's generations of storytellers before me. I think it's a primary way that we have communicated our history and we've shared cultural information. And so it also is the way that my mind sort of understands things, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in fundraising, there is a significant portion of storytelling that needs to happen. You know, when you're trying to inspire philanthropic investment, when you want people to understand, you know, the problem. And so, you know, I was always sort of, you know, playing in that space and honing that skill, and have always really enjoyed expressing myself through the written word. But in 2018, I happened across a call for proposals from AFP, and they were basically saying, if you're interested in providing content, send us a proposal. And one of the things that I noticed was, you know, there wasn't very much content, if any, coming from Black Canadian women. And I thought that that was, you know, a real disadvantage to our profession. And so I put together a proposal with the help of some of my sisters. And we just said, hey, like, we're out here. We have something to say. And here are some of the ways in which we could contribute to your content. And so they took us up on that. And out of that came the project Our Right to Heal, which was a compilation of 10 first-person narratives from Black female fundraisers here in Canada and their experiences of pain and racism and how they have healed from some of those experiences. And then that led into another opportunity to write Collecting Courage, which is an anthology. binational anthology of stories, 10 or 14 first person narratives, five Americans and nine Canadian fundraisers.
And you're one of those narratives, correct?
I am one of them. Yes, I am.
Tell us a little bit more about that, if you don't mind.
Sure. So Collecting Courage, for me, was a couple of things. I had the privilege of writing the introduction to the book, which was meant to create context for the American and Canadian experience from the lens of Black people. And I think it's a lens that is not well understood or shared broadly. And so I thought it was really important to create that context. Essentially, the point of the introduction is this, that Canada has more in common with the United States than not. And that is borne out through the fact that we share the same land. It was the same, quote unquote, settlers who arrived here, right?
Right.
It was the same slave system, although it looks different depending on the locality, right? And so the experience of Black people who came through the transatlantic slave, you know, trade, whether they were in the United States or in Canada, share a very similar experience in North America. And so it's important to set that context when you begin to explore the realities and the experiences, the lives of Black fundraisers or Black people. And so it was meant to set the stage to receive the 14 stories that were gonna unfold.
And that's one of the things that I love the most about the project is how it does link the realities of the past and past experiences with versions of that experience that are still present in fundraising community and in all nonprofit leadership really today.
That's exactly right. And I think it's, you know, it's really important to create those linkages with our American sisters who are authored in the book, and allow the reader to experience where, you know, where the pain points are, where right. The joy emerges despite the pain, how freedom is manifested in the face of these realities, and how love abides despite it all.
As I hear you talk, I keep reflecting back on the quote that you began the podcast episode with, that without community, there can be no liberation. And, you know, I go back to what you just said a few moments ago, that these were stories that had not been told. AFP did not have a section on this. There was no method of distribution to get these out to build that community. So I wonder if you could just reflect on how you've seen that community come together since the publication.
Well, so, absolutely. So, you know, our Right to Heal certainly began to cultivate an environment where the authors naturally coalesced, right? And so as that was happening, we were also attracting more predominantly women, for the most part at the beginning, into a group that we really didn't name at first. We just were gathering because, well, one, it's rare to see other Black people in the fundraising profession here in Canada. Most of us spend the bulk of our career in isolation. And so the importance of just gathering in a space with people who do the same work as you and look like you do and share the experience had an inherent benefit, right?
Yeah.
And so that was one reason, you know, the validation that comes through that. But then in addition to that, you know, the more we continue to meet, the more we just naturally gravitated toward wanting to make a difference. And so we started a giving circle because it's just really fundamental in our culture to position ourselves that way. You know, a really great book I read in December Madam C.J. Walker's Gospel of Giving does a fantastic job of laying out, you know, the history of Black women and our giving and our contribution to community and volunteerism. And so when I read that book, so much of it resonated for me in the origins, in the development and cultivation of the Black Canadian Fundraisers Collective. And so, of course, you know, over time, you know, that group just continued to grow. We're now over 50 Black fundraisers, and we have a couple of men, which is exciting. And so, you know, the opportunity to publish a book with Civil Sector Press was just another, it was just one more element of raising our voice and sharing our truth, filling in the historical record, if you will.
Right.
It also serves to combat the erasure that we often feel. And so it's interesting, the book for Black people has been one that's really healing and has been, has offered, you know, a form of liberation, interestingly right. enough. And encouragement and a call to continue to share, you know, at the beginning of our book, you know, in our dedication, we labored over this because we mean it. It says, to our Black community in all its diversity, our truth, our stories are ours to tell. Our voices are power. We summon you to testify, to document, and to share your life. And so that's what Collecting Courage is. It's a sharing of our lives.
And it's it really is a beautiful truth about community too, because sometimes when we think about community, it can almost feel insular, right? We think about a community and there's almost walls around it. The community that you're describing is one that is welcoming, that has grown, that has sprouted new efforts. You mentioned the Giving Circle and other efforts. It's one that has brought people who otherwise may not have been aware of those stories into the community, into the group.
Into the conversation, absolutely.
Into the conversation, absolutely.
And into relationship even. It's an invitation into relationship in a really authentic way, in a way that, you know, suspends societal norms,
right,
and suspends, you know, the status quo,
right,
but it is an invitation into a different reality
and an invitation to learn too. Yeah. Learn about the past and take us back to where we started the conversation around the Hour a Day Study Club and your opportunity to share personal connections to that group as well.
Absolutely. Well, I have to say, you know, last night I was on a call with my aunt and we were talking about the Hour a Day Study Club. And one of the really phenomenal connections that was made in that conversation was in 1954, the Hour a Day Study Club women, 50 of them, mm-hmm. united with the Emancipation Day celebration team to bring Eleanor Roosevelt and Mary McLeod Bethune to Windsor, which was a huge deal. And so I don't know how much your listeners know about Emancipation Day, but those celebrations in Windsor are iconic. You can Google it and you can see, you know, how many people came from all over and, you know, how big the celebrations were. But the coalescing of, you know, these groups together at this point in time was just really, phenomenal, because in 1954, when Eleanor Roosevelt came and the Hour a Day Study Club, along with my great grandmother, who was a member, made that happen. The American backdrop to that was Brown versus the Board of Education.
Right.
Which was the segregation of schools. Mm-hmm. And here is the Hour a Day Study Club, right, whose sole investment is in education, the education of themselves as women and the education of their children.
Right.
You know, brought Eleanor Roosevelt to Windsor to sort of, and Eleanor Roosevelt would have come in August and Brown v. Board of Education passed in May. That legislation right. would have been changed in May. Right. And so it would have been quite the celebration. And I have a picture of my grandmother standing next to Eleanor Roosevelt, which is a beautiful reminder to me and is the reason why when you say, reflect on community, what do you see? I see Black women.
Exactly.
Because they have just always been on the front lines of creating greater freedom for me and for our, you know, our future generations.
Anika, I'm a big fan through the podcast of giving listeners a call to action. So we share information, we share yes. stories through the podcast.
Yes.
For those who are listening, what is your call to action to them? What would you want to say to them that relates to your work?
Well, I would love to extend an invitation for your listeners to learn a little bit more about the realities in the lives of Black people. And the number one way you could do that today is you could visit collectingcourage.org okay. and pick up a copy of Collecting Courage. Listening is something that I don't think we think of as being an active thing, but it
Absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
And so there's a really great opportunity in Collecting Courage to listen in new ways and to expand your understanding of other people's lives and realities. So that would be my call to action, is to invite them into active listening through listening to the voices of our authors and Collecting Courage.
One of the things that I find, particularly through active listening, and maybe it's just me, but it tends to generate a lot more questions sometimes.
It does.
And particularly if the subject matter touches you and if the subject matter really mm-hmm. reaches you. For those who do reach out and do learn through Collecting Courage, and then it spurs questions.
Mm-hmm.
How do you suggest individuals ask those questions? Where do they go next to address some of those key questions?
So certainly through collectingcourage.org, we invite people to reach out to us. They can absolutely feel free to do that. For people who, you know, resonate with the stories in the book and have stories of their own to share, and they are, you know, people of color, we invite them to share their stories anonymously through collectingcourage.org. And we, the editors, read all of them. So we encourage them to do that. And certainly, you know, if people are feeling like they want to, you know, pursue a racial equity journey, I would invite them to reach out to me through the Empathy Agency at theempathyagency.ca. I'm happy to have a conversation about, you know, what next steps could look like. And certainly to answer any questions that people might have about what they've learned through Collecting Courage.
Excellent. Well, Anika, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us on the podcast today. I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, as I knew I would. And thank you for your time. And thank you for sharing the gift of yourself and your story with us.
Thanks so much, Greg. I'm so pleased to be here.
I appreciate it. Again, this has been Greg Nielsen, podcast Nonprofit Vision. For those of you who are enjoying the podcast, I encourage you to share it with your friends and colleagues. Tell people about it. If you are enjoying the episodes, be sure to leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform so others will notice it. And if you have specific questions or want to reach out to me directly, you can find me on my website at nielsenconsults.com, or you can get my email address or social media handles from the website. Thank you, everybody. Stay safe, stay well. Anika, thank you again for your time.
Thanks so much, Greg.